from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, Hillary Clinton. Whether you're a fan, a foe, or just can't face another national family return to the White House, you have to give her credit. Clinton has slowly crafted herself into one of the country's very biggest political figures. From a governor's spouse and first humiliated lady, she became a U.S. senator, a presidential candidate, secretary of state, and a major political pillar. Now, 2016 looms. Clinton's out on the speaking circuit. A war chest and a campaign machine are growing around her. Will she do it? And what if she does? This hour on Point, Hillary Clinton and the 2016 question. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do you hope she does? Hope she doesn't? And what does Hillary Clinton stand for now to you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. She's done it before, January 20th, 2007, then Senator Hillary Clinton announced. Des Moines, Iowa.
I'm running for president, and I'm in it to win it.
January 27th there, her voiced, vocal announcement of that. June 7th, 2008, after winning the South Dakota primary but losing in Montana, putting Barack Obama over the top with delegates, she formally ended her candidacy and endorsed Barack Obama. She spoke about her historic campaign as the first woman to ever win presidential primaries.
Although we weren't able to shatter that highest, hardest glass ceiling this time, thanks to you, it's got about 18 million cracks in it.
And then, just a couple of days ago, Saturday in Arizona, Arizona State University, thousands of college students there at a Clinton Global Initiative University meeting, and this student asked Hillary Clinton a question that got the audience roaring.
Ms. Clinton, if you don't represent women in politics in America as future president, who will?
Okay. And here was Hillary Clinton's response.
Look, I am very much concerned about the direction of our country. And it's not just who runs for office, but what they do when they get there and how we bring people together and particularly empower young people so that we can tackle some of these hard decisions we've just been talking about.
That's not a yes, and that's not a no. What an interesting political figure. We've got a great group with us to look at it today. With me first, from Washington, Alex Seitzwald, national political reporter for the National Journal. He's writing about Hillary Clinton a lot and is going to be working on the Clinton beat full-time in the months ahead. Alex, welcome. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
We're going to hear in just a moment from the great Charlie Cook about what the numbers look like out there. It's so early in that. But you can see some interesting things here. We're going to hear from Amy Parnes, who helped write the book on Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. I wish you'd help us understand, Alex, the political apparatus that, with or without her sanction, is already growing up around and underneath here. We've got Ready for Hillary, Correct the Record, American Bridge, and more. What are these? What's this panoply of sort of Go Hillary organizations that are already up and in gear, Alex?
Yeah, this is a fascinating and totally unprecedented development, largely a product of the campaign finance world we live in now, where candidates have to start moving earlier. They have to start raising money earlier. And all these outside groups, super PACs, et cetera, can start organizing legally without coordination with the candidates. So this whole kind of ecosystem has sprung up around her. There are four groups that are pretty much expressly dedicated to a potential Hillary Clinton candidacy. And not only are they working on her behalf, but they're working together. The Priorities USA, which was the big super PAC that helped Barack Obama get reelected in 2012, founded by some former Obama aides, has already decided that it's going to support Hillary Clinton. And on its board, they had a big reorganization in January. They've put on their board the leaders of these other four groups. So Ready for Hillary, which is sort of the main grassroots organizing group. Correct the Record, which is a brand new group started by David Brock, who's a big kind of Democratic maven. And they do rapid response and opposition research. And Emily's List, the women Democratic group, all of these people have representatives on this board. So this is a coordinated effort, and it's basically like if you took a presidential campaign and you took the different responsibilities that different departments on the campaign have, and then you assigned them out to one of these groups. So one does research, one does fundraising, one does grassroots organizing, and they're building a campaign without a candidate.
So we're reading – I'm reading today this Correct the Record outfit at American Bridge. I mean, they've got a dozen or more people just sitting there online in Washington now doing opposition research and record correcting, like live now, even without any signal from Hillary about whether or not she'll go.
Yeah, we are 2.5 years, more than 2.5 years away from the election, not even to mention a Democratic primary. And they're already started on this. They have, I think, 16 people on staff. They have some former Clinton aides, which is taken as a kind of tacit endorsement from Hillary Clinton herself, if these aides are on board, that she at least supports it. And she could, of course, come out any day and say that she thinks these groups are doing bad things for her, and they would probably shut down the next morning. So clearly she's kind of given her at least tacit approval here. So they are going out. They are responding to any attacks that they perceive in the media from Republicans. They are putting out their own documents, their own research. They're talking to reporters. And it's creating, much like on a political campaign, if I as a reporter, if a Republican sends me something attacking Hillary Clinton, I have someone to call now and they can respond to it. Hillary Clinton herself has about 7 or 8 full-time staffers. She has no capacity to do this. So they're kind of outsourcing this work, whether she explicitly asked for it or not.
What's her formal or rhetorical position at this point on a potential run for the presidency? How close has she come to saying anything or nothing? And has she said, I will decide by X date?
Well, there is a lot of tea leaf reading, Kremlinology, if you will, parsing the words that Hillary says and at that event. She said she's obviously considering lots of decisions, which is sort of the closest rhetorically she's come to saying that she's – to even acknowledging that she's considering another presidential run. But she's giving all the signs, and you can kind of like the way you measure a black hole, you can kind of see her gearing up for this by what she's not doing and by looking at the moves that are happening around her. She's clearly laying the groundwork. She's clearly considering it. She has an absolutely indomitable position. I mean, we've had front runners before, but we've never had a front runner quite as strong, quite as inevitable, to use the word that, of course, hung around her neck in 2008 before. Even on the left, which was her weakness in 2008, 87% of liberal Democrats say they want Hillary Clinton to run. You have this whole network springing up around her. Basically, every major Democratic donor in the country has already gotten on board. So everything is aligning. The stars are aligning in her place. And I don't see how someone like her, who has been Secretary of State, who has run for president, is clearly ambitious, clearly has wanted the job in the past. I don't see how she doesn't take that opportunity, assuming all trends hold going forward.
Alex, but in her personal musings in public, and I mean, anything can be for a purpose or it can be genuine, but she's expressed ambivalence. You know, she's talked about, hey, I'd like to have some of these grandchildren. I hear about a little pressure on Chelsea there, but sort of put out the notion that, hey, you know, maybe I'd rather be a grandma and do all that kind of thing. Not everybody wants to run for president, even be president at this stage in life.
Not everybody, but Hillary Clinton is not everybody. I mean, she's run before. She's clearly very ambitious. That said, I don't think – and the closer you get to her, the people who are really around her, they insist she hasn't made a decision, and I have no reason to doubt that. There are some people very close in her orbit who don't want her to run. They've seen the mud that you get dragged through. They've seen the – it's a horrible process for the candidate, for the family, for everyone around them, as she knows – better than anyone, having run herself and, of course, being in the Clinton White House. They see this and they say, you know, she has a stellar legacy right now. She's one of the most popular politicians in the country. Why mess with that? Why risk it all to run again? But I think for someone like her, it would be such a hard thing to pass up. And there's so much pressure from the rest of her party. It would be – I think a lot of people would feel betrayed if she didn't run. That said, I've been saying, people ask me, I've been saying 70-30 chance that she runs, with the two big possibilities of why she wouldn't being a health scare. She is, would be one of the older presidential candidates were she to run. She had a health scare in 2012. And the other being that if for whatever reason it looks like she doesn't have a clear path path to the nomination, let alone the presidency, but a clear path to Democratic nomination. And she would have to risk this legacy that she's spent so many decades carefully building and then really polished off with a successful term as Secretary of State. If that looks like it would be really put in jeopardy by another presidential run, then I think there's at least a chance she sits it out. But right now, that's not what the landscape looks like at all.
70-30, you say likelihood. Assets and liabilities in a nutshell?
Well, assets, certainly she'd be one of the most qualified candidates that we've seen in recent memory. And everybody, even Republicans, will acknowledge this point. She's been First Lady. She's been Secretary of State. She's been a senator. She knows how things work. She's run a presidential campaign herself. That said, it's a classic kind of example. All of her strengths are also some of her biggest weaknesses. Much like in 2008 when it was the inevitability and kind of taking for granted that this was hers, that is what ultimately cost her. And I talked to a former Obama aide who said that Hillary was a very bad candidate in 2007. And then in 2008, as soon as she lost that first caucus in Iowa, she suddenly became a very good candidate. Once that inevitability was out the window and once she actually had to get on the ground, do the retail politicking, shaking hands, once she was humbled, she became a good candidate. So her asset and her liability is this tremendous strength, this tremendous profile, this tremendous donor base that she's built up. But the flip side of that is, can she do the things to connect with people on the ground? Can she make a case for her candidacy that isn't just why not, that isn't just inevitability? Because that's not a good enough case. She needs to convince people why she should run, and I deserve it is not good enough.
She's put together a lot of strengths over the years. There may be issue liabilities. I mean, Benghazi, we know, will be put back in her face. Russia reset looks interesting right now. President Obama, she would follow him. His numbers aren't that great. There's Bill Clinton, former president, of course, a very interesting factor in himself. The most interesting factor here, Hillary Clinton herself, what she decides, her path now. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the plans and path of Hillary Clinton. All the talk of a run for the presidency. And 2016, at a ceremony last fall in Philadelphia honoring Hillary Clinton with the Liberty Medal, Jeb Bush, another potential presidential candidate with a pretty well-known name, awarded the medal to Clinton. In his address before that awarding, he joked about 2016.
Hillary and I come from different political parties, and we disagree about a few things, but we do agree on the wisdom of the American people, especially those in Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina.
You just can't get away from it. Here's Hillary Clinton last January, just before resigning as Secretary of State after her years there, talking with CNN's Jill Doherty about her legacy there.
I think we have to go back to my beginning in January of 2009 to remember how poorly perceived the United States was, how badly damaged our reputation was, how our leadership was in question, how the economic crisis had really shaken people's confidence in our government, our economic system, our country. Part of my job in the very beginning was to get around the world and restore confidence in American leadership.
Hillary Clinton, early last year on her way out as Secretary of State. Will all of her history work for her? Will it work against her? Of course, Republicans looking to turn it. And even on recent news, here's former Republican presidential candidate Newt Gingrich on CNN's State of the Union just Sunday, saying Hillary Clinton is only famous for being famous and that her popularity would fade once the presidential campaign 2016 gets serious.
The fact is, as Secretary of State, she reset our relationship with Russia so well that you currently have the occupation of Crimea and the potential occupation of Ukraine. So Secretary Clinton, on substance, the morning this race becomes about substance, she will start losing support literally overnight.
Well, Newt Gingrich, that's kind of what you would expect. But there it is, just part of the Republican push back on this front. Alex Zeitzwald is with us from Washington, national political reporter for the National Journal. With us as well from Washington right now, one of the best political handicappers in the nation, New York Times calls him, a little early for handicapping, but always a man with a deep insight, Charlie Cook, editor and publisher of the Cook Political Report, columnist for the National Journal. Charlie Cook, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom, for having me on.
And with us from New Orleans, Amy Parnes, senior White House correspondent for The Hill, co-author with Jonathan Allen of HRC, State Secrets and the Rebirth of Hillary Clinton. Amy Parnes, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Charlie, how do you look at Hillary Clinton at this point in the arc of her political career, thinking about 2016? Big picture, what do you see, Charlie?
Well, I did a column about 5 weeks ago for National Journal looking at the question of whether she would run or not. And I came up with the same number that Alex did, maybe 30% chance that she doesn't run, which obviously means 70% chance that she does. If this is a political decision, then it's, you know, 95, 99% likely that she runs. But I think these decisions, when people decide whether to run for president or not, it's not only a political calculation, but it's also a personal decision. And I think we have to remember, and I guess I'm cognizant of that, having turned 60 within the last year, is that Hillary Clinton right this moment is 66 years old. She will be turning 67 this October, so she'll be 67 at this point next year when, you know, pretty much the time that she would make a go, no-go decision, 68 through most of the campaign, turning 69 a couple weeks before the election. Now, Pete, I am absolutely not saying that she's too old to run or too old to win, because she's exactly the same age Ronald Reagan was when he was first elected in 1980.
Yep.
But 66, 67-year-old people do not make nine-year commitments lightly. They think about, how do I feel? Do I feel up to it? And this is something that Hillary Clinton, having watched her husband run for president twice, she's run once, she is very, very much aware of how grueling it is and how tough the last year or so as Secretary of State and running for president, certainly more grueling than that. She's very, very aware of that. And so I just think that people who treat this as only a political calculation, they're not really looking at human nature.
Amy, you're in New Orleans. Amy Parnes, you've looked at her closely in her job as Secretary of State. There are a lot of demands there. Presidency, I suppose, even more. But that's recent up-close examination you've done. What's your guess?
I've always said I'm 99.9% sure that she runs. My co-author John Allen and I have said that it isn't whether she starts running, it's whether she stops running. We think that she's been running the whole time throughout her time as Secretary of State. You know, she took things that weren't so good for her in the campaign, already started to perfect them. She was working with people developing, you know, working with business leaders. So something really, really significant would have to happen, in my opinion, to keep her out of the race.
Charlie, what do you think she's going to judge politically? There's the personal side. Do I want to do this for 9 years? Ronald Reagan decided yes. She might decide the same. Let's say she does. She'll do a political assessment. I mean, here we've got a sitting Democrat, Barack Obama, who she lost to in the primaries in the 08 campaign. His numbers are not that great. I think the general rhythm is, after 2 years of one party with not great numbers, it doesn't look so good for a candidate of the same party to follow on. How does she look at that, Charlie?
Well, I mean, if you just look at the nomination, then this is green light. I mean, there's absolutely no political reason why she should be afraid of a Democratic nomination. Of course, anybody could lose. The problem is, and you implied this, is what we don't know is what is the inherent value of a Democratic presidential nomination in 2016? And that equation is going to be determined by, in part, President Obama's job approval ratings. They will be driven by the approval favorability ratings towards the Affordable Care Act. And those two things together will basically tell you how open are Americans to giving Democrats a third consecutive term. Keeping in mind, as you said, we've had six second terms since the end of World War II, and only once have they given the party holding the White House for two terms a third term, and that was at the end of President Reagan's term, when his approval ratings were about 20 points higher than President Obama's are right now, and he didn't have something like an Affordable Care Act around his neck. So we don't know what the value of the Democratic nomination is going to be, and for that matter, we don't know whether Republicans have repaired the damage to their party, particularly with minority, young, women, moderate voters, which will help determine what the inherent value of a Republican nomination. So what, beyond the personalities, we don't know whether the nomination's worth a lot, because if President Obama's, if the Affordable Care Act and President Obama's numbers are basically at the end of, in 2016, are basically where they are right now, the Democratic nomination is not worth a whole lot to anybody.
Amy Parnes, you covered her at the State Department at the top there. In the last few days, she seems to have been in some subtle ways distancing herself on foreign affairs from President Obama, sounding more hawkish maybe on Iran, on Russia. What does that tell you, Amy?
She is. You know, throughout her time as Secretary of State, she was a hawk, and Vice President Biden was more of a dove. You know, we saw her take very decisive action. For one thing, she was, you know, Panetta, the then CIA director, went to her pretty early on because he wanted her buy-in on the raid to get bin Laden. And then she was very involved in the coalition around Libya. She was for the Afghan surge. This is a woman who is a hawk. And, you know, you might remember it doesn't do so. She doesn't do so well in a primary. You know, when voters have to judge her based on that in a Democratic primary, that hurt her in 2008 when they talked about her Iraq vote. This might hurt her in a primary as well.
Here's Mitt Romney talking about Hillary Clinton and Russia. This was on CBS's Face the Nation just Sunday. The former governor, former Republican presidential candidate, Clinton, criticizing President Obama and Secretary of State then, Hillary Clinton, on the way they built relations with Russia in light of the current situation in Ukraine.
I think effective leaders typically are able to see the future to a certain degree and then try and take actions to shape it in some way. And that's, of course, what this president has failed to do, and his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, as well. They thought resetting relations with Russia, handing out gifts to Russia, would somehow make Russia change its objectives. Well, that certainly wasn't the case.
Alex Heitzwald, what about Russia, the Ukraine, and the reset button that we all remember Hillary handing over in Moscow? How does the Russia issue work for her?
Well, it definitely calls into question, or at least reopens, her tenure as Secretary of State, which right now is generally regarded as a success. But you know, once you kind of push on it a little bit, there are lots of red flags lurking beneath the surface there. And I think Russia and the reset is definitely one of them. This was something that she can't distance herself from. It was her aide who came up with the idea of the reset button, the famous moment when she actually presented a red button to President Dmitry Medvedev. So I think some of her comments recently, taking a very strong stance against Russia, comparing Putin to Hitler's actions, I think not only is she trying to distance herself from the Obama White House, but she's also trying to put a little bit of distance between herself at this moment and herself of a few years ago when she made the reset, and trying to, you know, toe a tougher line. She got some positive response from Republicans on that. But on the other hand, you know, as Amy mentioned, Democrats are very skeptical of taking a hawkish stance. There was a new poll out today that shows 61% of Americans don't think the U.S. has a responsibility to get involved in the crisis in Ukraine. So she needs to be cognizant of, on one hand, shoring up her national security credentials as a hawk, which she's always been known as, and on the other hand, not alienating a liberal base too much. She has a lot of running room there. But if she came out too strong against Russia right now, I think she would start to worry about inflaming the base there.
And then, of course, there was the whole Benghazi imbroglio. January last year, she testified before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee about that attack on the American consulate, Benghazi, Libya, where Ambassador Chris Stevens and three other Americans died. When Republican Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson said the American people were misled about how the attacks unfolded, Hillary Clinton fired back very strong.
With all due respect, the fact is we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator.
Amy Parnes, I said strong. That was a hot response. Was it strong in the end? How tough is Benghazi as a lingering issue for her? Republicans do not let it go.
Well, it's definitely going to come back to haunt her again and again. You know, we talked to a lot of Republicans for our book, HRC, and they're basically saying, get used to seeing that comment again and again. They're going to be playing that. They're going to make Benghazi her 3 a.m. call, the one that she campaigned on in 2008. So I think we can get used to seeing that. But the thing is, we've already gone through one presidential election. You know, in 2012, President Obama wasn't hurt so much by Benghazi. It'll be interesting to see if Benghazi will really hurt her in 2016.
Let's go to our listeners. We've got a lot lined up here to comment. Nashville, Tennessee, Carl is calling. Hi, Carl. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Well, she's going to run. There's no doubt in my mind that she's going to run. She's highly qualified, and she's going to win in a landslide. She's going to win states like Arkansas, even Georgia, North Carolina, and Virginia. And here's the odd part about it. Hillary Clinton aside, the reason why she's going to win by 8 to 10 million votes over whoever Republican come out of that crowd is not really her doing. It's the Republican Party. They have effectively have pushed aside and alienated every group in this country other than 65-year-old evangelical white males in this country. And with their homophobic ways, their xenophobia, their flat-out even racist sometimes from the base, they're just going to lose because they can't help themselves. They have Tea Party themselves out of ever winning an election, presidentially-wise, in my lifetime, and I truly believe that. You can't gerrymander the whole country.
Carl, if you were king of the world, would you put Hillary at the top of the Democrats' ticket?
Actually, if I was king of the world, that's an excellent question.
Is she the best candidate, the best next president?
Right now, Hillary Clinton is the best hope for the Democratic Party, but basically it does not matter. We could run a McGovern, and he would win the president because of the way the Republicans have acted and treated other people in this country.
Carl, we've got it. There's some deep faith. I don't know. Let us look at it. Charlie Cook, what about our analysis there out of Nashville from Carl?
Well, I, with all due respect to Carl, and having looked at polls in Arkansas pretty closely, I don't think a Democratic presidential nominee could carry Arkansas unopposed. The president's approval rate in Arkansas is 32% or 34%. But, you know, I think she would be as strong or stronger than any other Democrat. And the question is, how much is the nomination worth? But I'd like to go back to the previous point. I have never, ever had a single independent or ideologically moderate person ever mention the word Benghazi. Basically, if you watch Fox, if you listen to Rush, you are all torqued up on Benghazi.
Yep.
But the polling shows that outside of conservatives and Republicans, it just doesn't cut one iota. People hear differing things, they're not sure, and they've moved on. So, and to be honest, I frankly don't think that her tenure as Secretary of State will be terribly relevant. I mean, people either vote for her or they're not going to vote for her, but I think it's generally based on their broader perception of Hillary Clinton and whether they're willing to vote for a Democrat more than, you know, what she did with Russia or anything else.
And on that broader perception, how do you read it? How do people see at this point in her career? She's had many, many phases. How do people read her strengths, if that's what they'd be voting on that side?
Well, I mean, if her favorable ratings are quite high, her unfavorable ratings are pretty low. But, you know, I don't know. Since we're not in a campaign, I'm not sure it means a whole lot. I mean, basically, everybody looks good when they're leaving the locker room and going out towards the about to get on the canvas before a boxing match. But, you know, so she looks fine. But again, it's. You know, do people want a Democrat or not? And as Carl pointed out, what kind of shape is the Republican Party in? You know, have they fixed their problem? Have they begun to fix their problems with Latino voters, with Asian voters, with women voters, with voters under 45? Those are big questions, too.
Those are all contextual. When they look straight at Hillary Rodham Clinton, what are they seeing on the plus side? Are they seeing now at this stage in their life, you know, experience, wisdom, 3 a.m. Efficacy?
Yes, but before the bout starts, the context is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people put way too much importance in presidential elections on the personalities. The fact is, 90% of the people who call themselves Democrats vote for Democratic candidates. And 90% of the people who call themselves Republicans vote for Republicans. And so, you know, so much of the vote is locked in. The question is, what about independents? What about moderates? You know, where persuadable swing voters, where are they? and they have a generally positive view of her. But they're not, you know, they're not in love, and it's it depends on the circumstances, whether they want a Democrat for another for a third term, or whether they think it's time for a change.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the plans and path of Hillary Clinton, all the talk of a run for the presidency and 2016. We're joined by Charles Cook, editor and publisher of the Cook Political Report, columnist for National Journal. Alex Zeitzwald is with us from National Journal, national political reporter there. And Amy Parnes is with us from New Orleans, co-author with Jonathan Allen of HRC State Secrets and the Rebirth of Hillary Clinton. You can read an excerpt of that terrific book at our website, onpointradio.org. She's senior White House correspondent for The Hill. She's been on this path before. It didn't work out in 2008. Here she was at the Democratic National Convention, where Senator Barack Obama was officially nominated. Hillary Clinton addressed the crowd, telling them why she ran and why she was then throwing her support behind the candidate who had bested her in the primaries.
I ran to stand up for all those who have been invisible to their government for 8 long years. Those are the reasons I ran for president. And those are the reasons I support Barack Obama for president.
Hillary Clinton, it wasn't the way she wanted it to be, but that's the way it was that time around. Here we are 2 terms later, and, well, everybody's waiting to hear. A lot of response here online. Kevin says, she's the clear leader. I think she'll run and win. Julie says, I hope not. I like her, but we need someone new who isn't so deeply part of the political machine. Kyle says, she'll run and will win. Nobody's better at dealing with the mudslinging and invented scandals. Trish, I like Hillary Clinton, but I don't think she should run. I don't like political dynasties. I mean, one of the issues here, Amy, that she soft-pedaled, really, in many ways, when she ran against Barack Obama, was her gender and the potential of being the first woman president of the United States. Do you think she'll put that kind of in the backseat again if she runs this time, Amy?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we have a scene in the book where we talk about, even at the very end, before her famous 18 million crack speech, she was sitting at her dining room table debating with 2 aides on whether or not she should embrace the fact that, you know, support all these people who, all these women who supported her. You know, this was something that she struggled with throughout the campaign. You know, Mark Penn, one of her chief aides, was basically saying that people, she doesn't really need to embrace the fact that she's a woman candidate. And I think that this was something she learned when she called her aides after the campaign to her office, and she said, what went wrong here? That was one thing that they really pointed to, the fact that she didn't embrace the fact that she was a woman candidate the way that Barack Obama embraced the fact that he was African American.
Alex, what about it? Hillary's gender this time out, would she put it more front and center? You heard that young woman in Arizona right at the top of the show, you know, kind of guilt tripping her, saying, if you don't do it, who will, as a woman candidate, potential president?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Amy on that. And you can look at polling when pollsters asked Americans why they think Hillary Clinton, what her biggest strengths are, the number one response is usually, or one of the top responses is that she's a woman. And especially as the Democratic coalition has changed since Barack Obama's election, it now relies heavily on women, especially single women. These are the kinds of people that Hillary needs to reach out for, and she would be, we assume, tremendously successful in garnering their support. So I think she would absolutely put that front and center.
Let me go to Jacqueline, Melrose, Massachusetts. Jacqueline, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, I am not in favor of Hillary. She's a very hawkish, cold-hearted person to me compared to others. When her husband, Bill Clinton, was president, he was asked by men such as Paul Wolfowitz and Don Rumsfeld to start the war in Iraq. They were pressing and pressing for that. He did not comply with them. He would not go to war with Iraq. And then when she was senator and President Bush was going for the war, she voted actually in favor of going to the war with Iraq, that tragic war that has killed 175,000 people there, ruined the country, and she's one of the many who voted for that war. She is too hawkish, too cold-hearted. I do not hear her talking about the impoverished in our country, the children who have no food. As Eisenhower spoke about it, and he was a great general, he spoke about the need to stop our wars and stop spending on all the war implements, but feed our children and give them homes They should not be homeless because we're spending money on bombs.
Jacqueline, we've got it. Charlie Cook, what about that line of disapproval? Hillary Clinton, this sounds like, you know, kind of a quite likely Democratic voter, but Hillary Clinton's too hawkish. What about that view, Charlie?
Well, I don't think, I mean, assuming that Hillary Clinton runs, I don't think she's going to be unopposed. I mean, I think you could probably see perhaps Howard Dean running, maybe Brian Schweitzer, the former governor of Montana. You know, you might even, more, a little bit more establishment, you might see Martin O'Malley, the governor of Maryland, but she wouldn't be unopposed. But to the, and so there will be room to, there is considerable room to her left within the Democratic Party. But, you know, to the other point, earlier point about women, you know, I had always anticipated that the nominating the first woman for one of the major parties, electing the first woman, would just be an absolutely enormous deal. And the fact is, in 2008, it got trumped by race. So that now, while yes, it's a big deal if we, you know, nominate, elect a woman president, it's kind of been trumped. And the thing is, the fact is, for the hopes and aspirations of women, if they all rest on one single person, that tells us, I suggest, that the women's movement hasn't moved much at all. But the fact is, if she doesn't run, you know, you're going to have women running. You might have Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York. You could have Amy Klobuchar, Senator from Montana. You could have Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts. The fact is, there are going to be women running for the Democratic nomination, whether Hillary Clinton runs or not. So, you know, I think this business about, you know, all the hopes and aspirations of all women are on Hillary running, you know, I'd like to think that the women's movement is sort of moved, is bigger than any one person.
And what about a Hillary Clinton presidency? What's your sense of where she would center that presidency? You hear our caller Jacqueline saying this is not her cup of tea. She wants something more social program-minded, more liberal, less hawkish abroad. Would Hillary Clinton look for Bill Clinton's kind of centrist politics in office? Charlie, is it clear to you?
I would just take a wild guess and say if you put on an ideological scale President Obama, and then about three clicks towards the center, you put Bill Clinton, and that Hillary Clinton would probably be somewhere in between. You know, a little bit less liberal than Barack Obama, but probably a little more liberal than her husband. That's probably an approximation of it. But, you know, it's always difficult to compare because every president is handed a certain plate with different, you know, different things on the plate, different issues, events to deal with. And so it's a little hard to compare one for another because, I mean, actually it'll be interesting to note that the youngest voters in 2016 will have been 2 years old when her husband left office.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why it's so incredibly important if she runs to make herself more relevant to the future than to the past.
Amy Parnes, a lot of Americans have expressed unhappiness with the sort of stalemate in Washington. Barack Obama and Congress at opposite ends of Pennsylvania Avenue and not a lot getting done. What about Hillary Clinton on that score? Does she look like a potential president who would be more effective after all of her history, however you interpret it, at working with Congress and Republicans in Congress, Amy?
Right, exactly. I think that, you know, President Obama has been criticized for not having those relationships. That's something that the Clintons, both Clintons, have. You know, they know how the system works and they know how to work the system. They have friends on the Hill. I thought it was very interesting when she left the campaign, she sent 16,000 thank you notes. That's
wow.
Quite remarkable, I think. It just shows you how many people she knows. These relationships mean a lot to her and to her husband. I think that it would be a whole different ballgame should she be in office.
Let's go to Meredith, calling from New Orleans, Louisiana. Meredith, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I had one quick point and then something I put up for debate about the situation. First is, I think the possibility for Hillary Clinton winning this election and becoming the president could really be a dawn of a new era in our country. From the simple fact of what the difference could be with a woman running things. And we've seen what the alpha male has done, you know, to the country on both sides, really. I mean, just the ego, it just gets in the way over and over and over again. And women physiologically are just more nurturing and caring. And I think it could be so beneficial. But the point that Amy was just saying, actually, you know, is it even worth it? If we just have to go through another 8 years because one side of the people that make the decisions in this country will once again refuse to work with an individual based on something like how different they are from themselves. You know, like so many people refuse to work with President Obama for the simple fact that he was a black man. And it could be the exact same situation with Hillary Clinton because she's a woman. And I mean, I'm a businesswoman, and it's fighting getting men to work with you and for you because they just can't get over that.
Meredith, I really appreciate your call. Our time is a little short, but let us pick it up right there. Charlie Cook, what about the stalemate issue and whether a President Clinton, Hillary Clinton, could break it?
Oh, on the one hand, you could say, well, electing a governor, someone that's never worked a day of their life in Washington could be a little different. But on the other hand, I think as was pointed out a little while ago, Hillary Clinton does understand the city, and she does have an understanding of Congress and the sort of the rhythms of it and the relationships. And and the other thing is sort of where is the Republican Party mentally? Is it will it have the Tea Party mindset that it had in a lot of 2011, 2012, and you're seeing even that subside a little bit. So it depends on just a lot of factors.
Talk about Hillary. Bill Clinton is never terribly far away. Certainly wasn't this weekend he was with her. So was Chelsea in Arizona. Here's a little bit. You've probably heard this before. This is from a 2011 interview with the conservative website Newsmax. President Bill Clinton praising his wife Hillary Clinton to the rafters.
I met her 41 years ago this last spring. Pretty quick, I decided that she was the ablest person in my generation. And nothing has happened in those 41 years to change my opinion of that. I might have been a better politician, at least at first, but I never met anybody I thought had the better combination of mind and heart.
Mind and heart. Bill Clinton never met anybody with a better combo. Of course, he brings his own baggage, and Republicans not shy about pointing that out. He was Republican Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky on Meet the Press, NBC, with David Gregory. This was in January. In a roundabout way, tying Hillary to some of Bill Clinton's troubles, scandals, in office.
Yes, I think it's a factor. Now, it's not Hillary's fault.
It should be an issue.
But it is a factor in judging Bill Clinton in history.
Right, but is it something that Hillary Clinton should be judged on if she were a candidate in 2016?
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that. This was with regard to the Clintons, and sometimes it's hard to separate one from the other. But I would say that with regard to his place in history, that it certainly is a discussion.
And the issue there was Monica Lewinsky. Alex Seitzwald, what about Bill Clinton, his potential role in a campaign, how people look at him as a first husband in the White House, this relationship as Hillary weighs whether to run or not to run?
Well, Republicans say that it's completely fair game to bring up the 90s controversies because she will run, they say, on the successes of the first Clinton White House. So then it's fair game for them to bring up the controversies. That might be true. I'm not sure how much that will resonate with voters. And Democrats say, bring up Bill Clinton as much as you like. People will remember the lowest unemployment rate and greatest economic prosperity that the country has seen in the past 100 years. We'll have to see about that. I do think Bill Clinton can be a huge asset to her, more so this year than in 2016. We've barely talked about the 2014 election, but before we get to 2016, of course, we have this midterm, which is promising to be bruising for Democrats, and it creates an awkward situation for Hillary. She's one of the most prominent voices in the party right now, and so there's going to be an expectation that she will campaign for Democrats, but she doesn't want to keep her she wants to keep her profile fairly low. She doesn't want to get too far overexposed, risk the same problems that she had in 2008. Enter Bill Clinton, who can do some of this campaigning. He can go on the stump. He can go in states where Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton might not be as popular and take at least a little bit of that heat off of her while she can stay kind of behind the scenes and do fundraising and other stuff that keeps her out of the spotlight. So I think Bill Clinton, there's three people in the Democratic Party who are in a class of their own when it comes to fundraising and name ID. Two of them are Clintons and one of them is Barack Obama. So that is a huge asset to her if Bill Clinton learns the lesson that he learned in 2008 and doesn't ruin things by making controversial comments and spiting people who are perceived as Hillary's enemies.
Tori in Buffalo, New York. Tori, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
At the beginning of the show, you referred to Mrs. Clinton as the humiliated first lady. And perhaps it's because I was only 8 years old when the Lewinsky scandal broke. And so I only understand it in an historical context. But I simply don't see how attempting to skewer her with the infidelities and indiscretions of her husband can be perceived as anything other than misogynist, and in a way holding her responsible, and how that could any ever hang around her neck when it came to a presidential run. And if you could explain to me otherwise.
Tori, let me speak to that. Absolutely not holding responsible. And maybe you had to be there. I don't know. But at the time, there was a moment in the long arc of Hillary Clinton's now multifaceted life in politics when it was a pretty humiliating situation, just no way around it. Now, it's history. Maybe it's such deep history that it doesn't matter at all to you, but it will be brought back up. And there it is. It's just part of the arc. Charlie Cook, Tori, thanks for your call.
Let me jump in. Do I think it should be held against her? Of course not. But having had small children back during the whole Monica Lewinsky thing, I tell you what, never before or since have we had to hit the mute button on the television set in our kitchen during the nightly news because there was something inappropriate being talked about, like blue dresses.
But is that washed out by time now? I think for many people, for Tory, it is. What do you think, Charlie?
No, I don't think it's relevant. But the thing is, mm-hmm. I don't think it's relevant now. I don't think it's going to be important. But was it humiliating at the time? Oh, absolutely. But no, I don't think it's going to hurt her. But gosh, there's no question she was humiliated at the time.
Amy, you saw her at the top of the State Department, picture at the top of the federal government in the White House. What's the tone of a Clinton presidency if that's what we might see?
I think it's actually it's a little different than Barack Obama's. It's like I said before, I think she's going to focus more on building relationships. It's going to be a little bit different in that way. She's an old hand in Washington, and that's good and bad. But I think she's going to use it for the good if she were to explain it.
We will have a lot to watch in the months ahead, and you've all helped us prepare to watch in a much more educated way, and I'm grateful for it. Amy Parnes, co-author of HRC, State Secrets and the Rebirth of Hillary Clinton. Amy, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Alex Seitz-Wald at National Journal. Alex, you're great. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And Charlie Cook at the Cook Political Report. Charlie, thanks as always. Great to have you join us.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Listeners, thanks you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.